All right, so we're diving into fibromyalgia today, and we're taking our info straight from the source.
Cool.
Orthopedia.
Orthopedia, yeah.
Edited by Bernstein, Penny, and Vayat. And for anyone out there listening, especially if you're studying, or even more importantly, treating patients, do yourself a favor, go check out the book. www.orthopedia.com. It's the world's best free and peer-reviewed textbook. We're just giving you the highlights here.
Absolutely.
But there's nothing like reading the full chapter for yourself.
Always go to the source.
Now, fibromyalgia, it's one of those things that always seems to spark some debate.
You say that again.
You know, lots of different opinions on what causes it, how to diagnose it, and the best way to manage it. It can get pretty complicated, to be honest.
Yeah, and one of the biggest reasons for that is that there isn't a single test, a blood test or an x-ray or anything that can definitively tell you, yep, this person has fibromyalgia.
Right. So without that kind of objective proof, it becomes more open to interpretation.
Exactly.
And you can see how that leads to some people questioning whether it's a real condition or whether there's a strong psychological component, especially when you consider symptoms like allodynia. That's where even a light touch can be painful.
Right. It's a very real phenomenon for those experiencing it.
It is. But here's the thing, and this is really important, whether you believe fibromyalgia is primarily physical or psychological or some combination of the two, the suffering people experience is absolutely real. And that's what we need to focus on, finding ways to reduce that suffering and help people live better lives.
I couldn't agree more. Regardless of the debate surrounding its nature, the impact on a person's life can be significant. It affects their daily activities, their ability to work, their relationships, their overall well-being.
Absolutely. So let's dig into some of the key ideas around fibromyalgia. One concept that comes up a lot, and it's actually a pretty fascinating one, is central sensitization.
It's a bit of a game changer in how we think about pain.
So what does that really mean?
Well, central sensitization basically means that the central nervous system, that's the brain and spinal cord, becomes more sensitive to pain signals. It's almost like the volume knob for pain gets turned up way too high.
So things that wouldn't normally be painful suddenly are.
Exactly. And pain that's already there can feel way more intense. And the thinking is that this heightened sensitivity might develop due to a combination of genetic factors, what you're born with, and various things you're exposed to in your environment throughout life.
That's interesting. So it could be a mix of nature and nurture.
Yeah, potentially. Hmm. And understanding central sensitization is key because it changes how we approach treatment. It's not just about finding and fixing damage in the tissues, but also about finding ways to modulate or adjust the nervous system itself. The whole different way of looking at pain management.
So let's say someone comes to a doctor with what they think might be fibromyalgia. What would that typically look like?
Well, the most common picture is someone who's been experiencing widespread pain throughout their body for at least 3 months. And this pain affects multiple different areas. And it's not just a mild ache. It's usually described as pretty intense and persistent discomfort.
So that chronic widespread pain seems to be the hallmark.
It is. And along with that pain, you'll typically see significant fatigue, feeling tired, even after getting a full night's sleep, and various cognitive complaints, what's often called fibro fog.
And we'll come back to that fibro fog in a bit because it's a pretty significant part of the experience. But you mentioned earlier that fibromyalgia can't be confirmed through tests like blood work or imaging. So when someone goes to the doctor with these symptoms, how does the diagnosis actually happen?
It's mainly a clinical diagnosis, which means it's based on the patient's history, what they tell the doctor about their symptoms, and a physical examination. The doctor will listen carefully to the patient's description of their pain, how long it's been going on, where it is, how severe it is, and all the other symptoms they're experiencing.
So it's really about listening to the patient.
It is. Now, they'll also do a physical exam to check for any tenderness or other signs, but here's a key point. They won't typically see the signs of inflammation that you might see in other conditions like arthritis. There won't be redness or swelling in the areas where the patient's reporting pain.
And that's because fundamentally fibromyalgia isn't an inflammatory condition.
Right. Now, doctors might order some blood tests or imaging studies, but those aren't used to diagnose fibromyalgia itself. They're mainly to rule out other possible conditions that could be causing similar symptoms. Things like arthritis, thyroid disorders, or autoimmune diseases.
So it's a process of elimination.
You could do that.
It makes sense. So now that we have a better understanding of how it's diagnosed, let's talk about how common fibromyalgia is. Are we talking about something that affects a small percentage of the population, or is it more widespread?
It's more common than you might think. It's estimated that fibromyalgia affects about 2 to 4% of the population. And interestingly, it's about twice as common in women as in men.
Wow, that's a pretty significant difference between the sexes.
It is. And another interesting thing is that people who already have other chronic pain conditions like irritable bowel syndrome, rheumatoid arthritis, or lupus are more likely to develop fibromyalgia as well.
So it's not just about the pain itself. It's about how the body and potentially the brain are processing and responding to it.
Exactly.
All right. So we've talked about widespread pain, fatigue, and cognitive issues as the core symptoms of fibromyalgia. But the sources we're looking at also mention a whole range of other physical and emotional symptoms.
Yeah, it can really affect a lot of different systems in the body. Many people with fibromyalgia also experience frequent headaches, dizziness, digestive problems like bloating, nausea, and diarrhea.
Oh, wow. So it's not just musculoskeletal. It can be systemic as well.
Right. And on the emotional side, it's really common to see people with fibromyalgia also struggling with things like depression, anxiety, and increased irritability.
And all of that can really add to the overall burden of the condition.
Absolutely.
Now, let's go back to that term fibrofog, because it seems to capture a really important aspect of fibromyalgia. Can you break down exactly what that means?
Sure. Fibrofog refers to that cluster of cognitive difficulties that we talked about earlier. Things like having trouble remembering things, especially recent events, like walking into a room and forgetting why you went there, or struggling to concentrate or focus on tasks.
It's almost like having brain fog, but specifically associated with fibromyalgia.
Yeah, and people with fibrofog might also have trouble finding the right words when they're speaking, feel like their thinking has slowed down, or just have a general feeling of being mentally fuzzy or less sharp than usual.
And I imagine that can be incredibly frustrating for people trying to go about their daily lives.
It definitely can. It can affect their work, their relationships, their overall sense of confidence and well-being.
So what can be done to help people with fibromyalgia? What are the goals of treatment, and what kinds of approaches are typically used?
The main goals of treatment are to reduce the severity of the symptoms, especially the pain, fatigue, and cognitive problems, and to improve the person's overall quality of life. But it's really important to understand that there's no one-size-fits-all solution for fibromyalgia. What works well for one person might not work at all for another.
So a very individualized approach is needed.
Absolutely. The treatment plan needs to be tailored to the individual's specific needs and symptoms. And often, the best approach involves a combination of different strategies.
So what are some of the key components of a fibromyalgia treatment plan?
Well, one of the cornerstones of management is non-pharmacological interventions, things that don't involve medication.
So things like lifestyle changes.
Yes, exactly. Things like cognitive behavioral therapy or CBT, which helps people develop coping mechanisms for dealing with chronic pain and other symptoms. Low-impact aerobic exercise can also be really helpful. Even though it might be uncomfortable at first, it can lead to long-term improvements in pain and function.
And I imagine patient education is also important.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Helping people understand what fibromyalgia is, how it works, and what they can do to manage it can be incredibly empowering.
It takes away some of the mystery and fear surrounding the condition.
Exactly. And there are other therapies that some people find helpful, like acupuncture, massage therapy, and various stress reduction techniques like yoga and mindfulness.
So there are a lot of different non-drug options to explore. What about medications? Are there specific medications that are commonly used to treat fibromyalgia?
Yes, there are a few medications that are specifically FDA approved for the treatment of fibromyalgia. These include pregabalin, which is an anticonvulsant medication, and duloxetine and milnacipran, which are a type of antidepressant called serotonin norepine reuptake inhibitors, or SNRIs.
And are those the only medications that are used?
No, there are a number of other medications that doctors often use off-label to help manage different symptoms of fibromyalgia. For example, they might prescribe muscle relaxants like cyclobenzaprine or tizanidine to help ease muscle pain and spasms. They might also prescribe gabapentin, another anticonvulsant, or other types of antidepressants like amitriptyline.
So it seems like finding the right medication or combination of medications can be a bit of a trial and error process.
It can be, yeah. And it's important to work closely with a doctor to find what works best for you and to manage any potential side effects.
It's interesting that the sources we're looking at mention that typical pain relievers like ibuprofen or acetaminophen aren't usually very effective for fibromyalgia pain. Why is that?
That likely goes back to the whole idea of central sensitization. since the pain in fibromyalgia isn't primarily caused by inflammation or injury in the tissues, but rather by changes in how the central nervous system processes pain signals. Those traditional pain relievers, which target peripheral pain pathways, often don't provide significant or lasting relief.
So it's not that the pain isn't real, it's that it's originating from a different place.
Exactly. And it requires a different approach to treatment.
That makes sense.
Now, in addition to medication and those non-pharmacological approaches we discussed, lifestyle modifications also play a big role in managing fibromyalgia.
So things like diet and exercise.
Yes, exactly. Maintaining a healthy weight, engaging in regular physical activity as much as you can tolerate, and addressing any coexisting mental health conditions like depression and anxiety are all important parts of managing fibromyalgia. And getting good quality sleep is also crucial. A lot of people with fibromyalgia have trouble sleeping, so working on good sleep hygiene can make a big difference.
So it sounds like managing fibromyalgia is a really multifaceted endeavor. It requires a lot of collaboration between the patient and their healthcare team.
It does. There's no quick fix or easy answer.
And I imagine it can be pretty challenging for both sides, for the people living with fibromyalgia and for the healthcare providers trying to help them.
It definitely can be. The fact that there's no known cure for fibromyalgia, the fact that people respond so differently to different treatments, and the potential for side effects from medications all add to the complexity of managing this condition.
But hopefully by understanding the condition better and by exploring different treatment options, people with fibromyalgia can find ways to manage their symptoms and improve their quality of life.
Absolutely. And that's what it's all about.
So before we wrap up, are there any key takeaways or points that you think are especially important for people to remember?
I think it's helpful to remember those five key terms that we discussed. First, fibromyalgia itself. It's a disorder characterized by chronic widespread pain, usually in the muscles and bones, along with a bunch of other symptoms like fatigue, problems with thinking and memory, mood disturbances, and sleep issues.
And the second key term was the difference between objective and subjective. Can you give us a quick refresher on that?
Sure. Think about a fever. If you take someone's temperature and it reads 102 degrees, that's an objective measurement. Anyone can see and verify that number. But if someone says, I feel really hot and I have chills, that's a subjective experience. It's what they're feeling internally.
Mm-hmm.
And in conditions like fibromyalgia, we often rely heavily on these subjective reports because we don't have those same clear-cut objective measurements.
Right, because there's no blood test that can say for sure, yes, you have fibromyalgia.
Exactly. But it's so important to remember that these subjective experiences are still very real and can have a huge impact on the person's life.
Absolutely. Okay, what's the third term we should keep in mind?
That would be central sensitization. Remember, that's the idea that the central nervous system, the brain and spinal cord, becomes more sensitive to pain signals in fibromyalgia.
And that's thought to be a major driver of the widespread pain that people with fibromyalgia experience.
Exactly.
Okay, and the fourth key term is allodynia.
Right. Allodynia is when someone experiences pain from things that wouldn't normally be painful, like a light touch or the pressure of clothing.
And the final term is fibrofog.
Exactly. Fibrofog is that collection of cognitive complaints that we talked about, like memory problems, trouble concentrating, and slowed thinking.
Great. So remembering those five terms, fibromyalgia, objective versus subjective, central sensitization, allodynia, and fibrofog, can really help you understand this complex condition better.
Definitely.
While we have just discussed a chapter from the world's best free and peer-reviewed textbook of musculoskeletal medicine, Orthopedia, by Bernstein, Pinney, and Vayet, it's available at www.orthopedia.com at no charge. And again, before you take a test, and certainly before you take care of a patient, don't rely on us. Read the book. You'll be glad you did.
You know, as we continue to unravel the mysteries of pain and gain a deeper appreciation for the importance of subjective experiences in medicine, I think it's fascinating to consider how our understanding and approach to conditions like fibromyalgia might evolve in the future, especially as we learn more about how the brain processes pain. What new diagnostic tools might emerge? What innovative treatment approaches might we develop? It's definitely a space to watch.
Absolutely. It's a really exciting time to be in this field.
It is.
Well, on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive into fibromyalgia.
Thanks for having me.
It was great to have you here.
Always a pleasure.
And to everyone listening, thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time for another deep dive.